Physical Models in Remote Sensing. Chapter 01, Part 02, Radiative Quantities. Narrative Study Guide. EE 445/645, Physical Models in Remote Sensing. Spring 2026. Professor Rongda B. Minini, Boston University. Introduction to Radiative Quantities. Welcome to Chapter 1, Part 2, where we explore the fundamental radiometric quantities that form the language of remote sensing. Understanding these quantities, how we describe, measure, and calculate electromagnetic radiation, is absolutely essential for interpreting satellite measurements, designing sensors, and modeling radiative transfer through the atmosphere and vegetation canopies. In this presentation, we'll develop a rigorous mathematical framework for describing electromagnetic radiation. We'll start by conceptualizing radiation as a photon cloud, a collection of discrete energy packets traveling through space. We'll introduce the photon distribution function, which tells us precisely how many photons of each frequency are traveling in each direction at each point in space and time. From this microscopic description, we'll build up the macroscopic quantities that sensors actually measure, specific intensity, which describes directional energy flow, flux density, which integrates over all directions, irradiance, which integrates over all frequencies, and radiant power, which integrates over a surface area. Along the way, we'll confront some deep questions. What is the nature of electromagnetic radiation? Is it a wave or a particle? How does it propagate through empty space without any medium? What do we mean by time and space when light itself defines these concepts? These philosophical questions have practical answers that directly affect how we do remote sensing. The photon cloud, a statistical description of light. Let's begin with a conceptual picture. Imagine electromagnetic radiation as a cloud of photons, discrete packets of energy, streaming through space in various directions, with various frequencies, at various locations. This is the photon cloud model. The dual nature of light. Electromagnetic radiation exhibits both wave-like and particle-like properties. This is the famous wave-particle duality of quantum mechanics. Classical electromagnetic theory, developed by Maxwell in the 19th century, treats radiation as continuous waves of oscillating electric and magnetic fields. This wave description explains interference, diffraction, and polarization beautifully. But quantum mechanics, developed in the early 20th century, revealed that light also behaves as discrete particles called photons. Each photon carries a quantum of energy related to its frequency. This particle description explains the photoelectric effect, Compton scattering, and the operation of photon counting detectors. In remote sensing, we often find it convenient to work with the photon description for several reasons. First, photons carry quantized energy directly related to their frequency through Planck's relation. Second, many sensors, particularly LiDAR systems, actually count individual photons. Third, the photon picture naturally leads to the radiometric quantities we use in practice. So while electromagnetic radiation is fundamentally neither purely wave nor purely particle, the photon model provides a useful framework for our purposes. Why photon cloud? The term photon cloud emphasizes that we're dealing with a statistical ensemble of many photons rather than tracking individual particles. At any location in space and time, there exists a distribution of photons traveling in various directions with different frequencies. This distribution is not static, it changes continuously as photons are emitted from sources like the sun or the Earth's surface, propagate through the atmosphere, are scattered by atmospheric particles such as molecules, aerosols, and cloud droplets, are absorbed by atmospheric constituents, and interact with the Earth's surface through reflection, absorption, and transmission. Understanding this dynamic photon cloud is central to remote sensing. Every measurement we make with a satellite sensor is essentially sampling this cloud, counting how many photons of which frequencies, traveling in which directions, reach the detector during the integration time. The photon distribution function. To describe the photon cloud mathematically, we need a systematic way to count photons. But we can't simply count all photons at a point. This would give us infinity or zero, neither of which is useful. Instead, we must specify exactly what we're counting. Counting photons precisely. To count photons precisely, we need to specify several things. First, where in space are we counting? We denote position by the vector r, which has three components in Cartesian coordinates x, y, and z. Second, when are we counting? Time is denoted by t. For time-dependent problems like pulsed LiDAR, this is crucial. For steady-state problems, we can often ignore the time dependence. Third, which direction are photons traveling? Direction is specified by the unit vector omega, typically described by two angles, the polar angle theta, measured from the vertical or zenith direction, and the azimuthal angle phi, measured around the vertical axis. Fourth, what is their electromagnetic frequency? Different frequencies interact differently with matter. Frequency is denoted nu, measured in hertz. Alternatively, we can specify wavelength lambda, related to frequency by c equals nu times lambda, where c is the speed of light. The distribution function f. The photon distribution function, written f of r, nu, omega, t, describes the number density of photons in a seven-dimensional space, three spatial dimensions for position, two angular dimensions for direction, one frequency dimension, and one temporal dimension. Formally, F tells us the number of photons dn in an infinitesimal volume element around position r, traveling in direction omega within solid angle d omega, with frequency in the interval from nu to nu plus d nu, at time t. Mathematically, we write dn equals f times d cubed r times d omega times d nu. This function is the foundation for all radiative transfer calculations. It evolves in space and time according to the radiative transfer equation, which we'll develop in later lectures. The RTE accounts for emission processes that create new photons, absorption processes that remove photons, and scattering processes that change photon directions. The seven-dimensional nature of this function might seem daunting, but it's necessary. To fully describe the radiation field, we need to know not just where photons are, but also when they're there, which way they're going, and what frequency they have. Each of these variables matters for remote sensing. Energy transport by photons. While counting photons is conceptually clear, most radiometric instruments don't count photons, they measure energy. So we need to connect our photon description to energy flow. From photon counts to energy. The connection between photon number and energy is provided by one of the most fundamental equations in quantum mechanics, Planck's relation. The energy of a single photon, E sub nu, equals Planck's constant h times the frequency nu. Planck's constant is a very small number, approximately 6.626 times 10 to the negative 34th joule seconds. But even though it's small, it has profound implications. It tells us that energy comes in discrete packets, quanta, not in a continuous spectrum. This equation reveals that higher frequency photons carry more energy. Think about the electromagnetic spectrum. At the low frequency end, we have radio waves with frequencies around a million hertz. At the high frequency end, we have gamma rays with frequencies around 10 to the 20 hertz. A gamma ray photon carries something like 10 trillion times more energy than a radio photon. For visible light, let's be more specific. A blue photon with wavelength around 450 nanometers has frequency about 6.7 times 10 to the 14th Hertz. A red photon with wavelength around 650 nanometers has frequency about 4.6 times 10 to the 14th Hertz. Using Planck's relation, the blue photon carries about 1.5 times more energy than the red photon. This is why blue light appears brighter to our eyes for the same number of photons. Energy flow requires time. The photon distribution function F describes the photon density at an instant in time. But to realize energy transport, the actual transfer of energy from one location to another, we must allow time to elapse. This is because energy transport is fundamentally a rate, energy per unit time. Consider photons traveling through space at speed c. During a small time interval dt, photons move a distance c times dt. The photons that cross a surface element ds during this time interval are those within a specific volume, essentially a cylinder with base ds and height c times dt times cosine of theta, where theta is the angle between the photon direction and the surface normal. This geometric consideration, the cosine factor, is crucial. Photons traveling perpendicular to a surface cross that surface most efficiently. Photons traveling at grazing angles cross less efficiently. This cosine factor appears repeatedly in radiative transfer theory and has profound practical consequences, such as why solar heating varies with latitude and season. Time and space in electromagnetic radiation. Before we can talk meaningfully about photons transporting energy through space over time, we need to understand what we mean by space and time. These concepts, which seem so intuitive in everyday life, become subtle when we consider electromagnetic radiation. The speed of light is a fundamental constant. The speed of electromagnetic radiation in vacuum is one of the most precisely known physical constants, C equals 299,792,458 meters per second, exactly. This is not an approximation. Since 1983, this value is defined by international agreement. But here's the remarkable thing, this value isn't merely measured, it's used to define the meter. The modern definition of the meter is the distance light travels in vacuum in 1 divided by 299,792,458 of a second. So we have a circular definition, time defines space, and space defines time, with the speed of light as the linking constant. Think about what this means. A meter is the distance light travels in 1/299,792,458 of a second. Conversely, a second is the time light takes to travel 299,792,458 meters. Space and time are intertwined through the speed of light. This isn't just philosophical, it has practical implications for remote sensing. When we use LIDAR to measure distance, we're literally using the definition of the meter. The laser pulse travels to the target and back at speed c. By measuring the time delay, we calculate distance. Distance equals c times time divided by 2. The precision of our ranging measurement is fundamentally limited by how precisely we can measure time and how stable the speed of light is, and c is perfectly stable by definition. Three-dimensional space. Our universe appears to have three spatial dimensions. This seemingly obvious fact, we can move forward-backward, left-right, and up-down, has profound implications for radiative transfer. First, radiation spreads in three dimensions, causing the inverse square law for point sources. If you double your distance from a point source, the radiation is spread over four times the area, so the intensity decreases by a factor of 4. Second, a full sphere subtends 4 pi steradians of solid angle. A hemisphere, which is relevant for flux calculations at a surface, subtends 2 pi steradians. These specific values arise from the three-dimensionality of space. Third, we need angular coordinates to describe radiation directions. We typically use spherical coordinates with polar angle theta measured from the vertical and azimuthal angle phi measured around the vertical axis. These two angles completely specify any direction in three-dimensional space. The nature of electromagnetic radiation propagation. How does electromagnetic radiation actually travel? This is one of the most fascinating questions in physics, and the answer reveals something profound about the nature of reality. Self-propagating waves. Electromagnetic radiation has a remarkable property. It is self-propagating. Unlike mechanical waves, sound waves, water waves, seismic waves that require a medium to travel through, EMR can propagate through perfect vacuum. How is this possible? The answer lies in a beautiful leapfrog mechanism between electric and magnetic fields. Here's how it works. Step 1. A changing magnetic field, one that's getting stronger or weaker over time, creates an electric field in the surrounding space. This isn't just theory, it's Faraday's law of electromagnetic induction, verified by countless experiments. Step 2. That newly created electric field is also changing in time, and a time-varying electric field generates a magnetic field. This is the Ampere-Maxwell law, Maxwell's great contribution to electromagnetic theory. Because each field creates the other, they feed off one another. The electric field creates a magnetic field slightly ahead of it in space. That magnetic field then creates an electric field even further ahead. This allows the electromagnetic wave to move forward indefinitely, even through the complete vacuum of space. It's like the wave pulls itself forward by its own bootstraps. The changing electric field at position X creates a magnetic field at position X plus delta X. Then the changing magnetic field at X plus delta X creates an electric field at X plus 2 delta X. And so on, indefinitely, at the speed of light. Field waves versus mechanical waves. This makes electromagnetic waves fundamentally different from the waves we encounter in everyday life. Ocean waves propagate because water molecules push against each other. Sound waves propagate because air molecules vibrate and collide with neighboring molecules. Seismic waves propagate through rock and soil particles transferring energy from one to the next. All these are mechanical waves. They require a material medium. Remove the water, and ocean waves can't exist. Remove the air, and sound can't propagate. This is why there's no sound in space, there's no medium to carry the vibrations. EMR is fundamentally different. It's a field wave. Fields, electromagnetic fields, gravitational fields, exist throughout space, even in complete vacuum. An electromagnetic wave isn't stuff moving through space. Rather, it's a disturbance in the electromagnetic field that propagates through space at speed c. This is why satellites can communicate with Earth across the vacuum of space. Radio waves from a satellite don't need any medium, they're self-propagating disturbances in the electromagnetic field. This is also why we can see stars billions of light years away. The light traveled through the near-perfect vacuum of interstellar space for billions of years before reaching our telescopes. Geometric considerations in three-dimensional space. Now that we understand the nature of electromagnetic radiation, we need to develop the geometric framework for describing how it transports energy through three-dimensional space. Solid angle and direction. In three-dimensional space, we need a mathematical way to specify directions. A direction can be thought of as a point on a unit sphere, a sphere of radius 1 centered at the origin. Every direction from the origin corresponds to exactly one point on this sphere. Just as we measure ordinary angles in radians or degrees, we measure solid angles in steradians. A solid angle, denoted d omega, represents a small patch on the unit sphere. The total solid angle of a complete sphere is 4 pi steradians. A hemisphere has solid angle 2 pi steradians. Using spherical coordinates with polar angle theta measured from vertical and azimuthal angle phi measured from a reference direction, the solid angle element is d omega equals sine of theta d phi. Alternatively, we can use the directional cosine mu, defined as cosine of theta. Then d omega equals d mu d phi. This formulation is often more convenient for integration because the limits become simpler. Mu ranges from negative 1 to positive 1, covering the full sphere. The surface projection factor. When radiation traveling in direction omega crosses a surface with normal vector n, the effective cross-sectional area depends on the angle between omega and n. This is described by the projection factor, n dot omega, or equivalently, cosine of theta. Think about solar panels. When the sun is directly overhead, perpendicular to the panel receives maximum radiation because cosine of 0 degrees equals 1. When the sun is at the horizon, parallel to the panel receives essentially no radiation because cosine of 90 degrees equals 0. This projection factor explains many phenomena in remote sensing and climate. Solar heating varies with latitude because the sun's angle changes with latitude. At the equator, the sun can be directly overhead, giving maximum heating. At high latitudes, the sun is always at an angle, giving reduced heating. This is why polar regions are cold and equatorial regions are warm. The projection factor also explains seasonal variations. In summer, your hemisphere is tilted toward the sun, increasing the sun's angle and the cosine factor. In winter, your hemisphere is tilted away, decreasing the angle and the heating. The cosine factor is the fundamental reason for seasons. Hemispherical integration. Many radiometric quantities require integrating over a hemisphere of directions. For a horizontal surface, the upward hemisphere is described by theta ranging from 0 degrees at zenith to 90 degrees at the horizon, and phi ranging from 0 to 360 degrees for the full rotation around the vertical. Equivalently, using directional cosine mu, the upward hemisphere corresponds to mu from 0 to 1, and phi from 0 to 2 pi. The integral over the upward hemisphere of any quantity f is double integral over phi from 0 to 2 pi and mu from 0 to 1 of f times d mu d phi. This hemispherical integration appears constantly in remote sensing. When we calculate the total solar radiation hitting a horizontal surface, we integrate the sky radiance over the upper hemisphere. When we calculate the radiation emitted by a surface, we integrate the emitted radiance over the upper hemisphere. Specific intensity, the fundamental radiometric quantity. Now we're ready to define the most important radiometric quantity in all of remote sensing, specific intensity, also called radiance. Definition and physical meaning. Specific intensity, denoted I, is a function of position r, frequency nu, direction omega, and time t. It represents the energy flow per unit time, per unit area, per unit solid angle, per unit frequency interval. Let me unpack this definition carefully. The energy diff flowing through a surface element ds, in direction omega within solid angle d omega, at frequency nu within interval d nu, during time interval dt, is given by d equals I times absolute value of cosine theta times ds times d omega times d nu times dt. The cosine theta factor accounts for the projection of the surface onto the direction of radiation flow. Specific intensity is the most detailed description of the radiation field. It tells us not just how much energy is flowing, but in which direction and at which frequency. Every other radiometric quantity, flux, irradiance, radiant power, can be derived from specific intensity by appropriate integration. Units and dimensions. The SI units of specific intensity are watts per square meter per steradian per hertz. Let's break this down term by term. Watts measure energy per unit time, the rate of energy flow. Per square meter means we're normalizing by area, energy flow through a unit surface. Per steradian means we're normalizing by solid angle, energy flow in a unit cone of directions. Per hertz means we're specifying the spectral density, energy per unit frequency interval. Sometimes specific intensity is expressed per unit wavelength instead of per unit frequency. Then the units are watts per square meter per steradian per nanometer, or per micrometer. Be careful when converting between frequency and wavelength representations. There's a Jacobian factor involved because equal intervals in frequency don't correspond to equal intervals in wavelength. Key properties of specific intensity. Specific intensity has several remarkable properties that make it the fundamental quantity in radiative transfer. It is directional. It depends strongly on direction omega. If you look at the sun, you see enormous intensity. If you look away from the sun at the blue sky, you see much less. The radiation field is highly anisotropic. Different directions have vastly different intensities. It is frequency dependent. The spectrum I as a function of nu contains information about the source and the intervening medium. The sun's spectrum peaks in the visible. The Earth's thermal emission peaks in the infrared. Vegetation has high reflectance in near-infrared and low reflectance in red. It is conserved along rays in vacuum. In the absence of absorption, emission, or scattering, specific intensity remains constant along a ray. This is a profound result. Unlike flux, which decreases as 1 over r squared from a point source, intensity is constant. This is why stars don't appear dimmer as you move away from them in space. The intensity is constant, though the solid angle they subtend decreases. It is directly measurable. Instruments with a narrow field of view measure specific intensity directly. A satellite sensor with a small pixel essentially measures the intensity in a particular direction. This is why we say satellites measure radiance. Flux density and irradiance. While specific intensity provides the most detailed description of radiation, we often want simpler quantities that integrate over directions. This leads to flux density. Net flux density. The net flux density, denoted F, at position r, frequency nu, and time t, is the rate of energy flow across a unit area, per unit frequency. It's obtained by integrating specific intensity over all directions, weighted by the projection factor. Mathematically, F equals the integral over the full sphere of I times n dot omega times d omega. The integral is over 4 pi steradians. The dot product n dot omega accounts for the projection factor and can be positive or negative depending on whether radiation flows in the plus n or minus n direction. The units of flux density are watts per square meter per hertz. Notice we've integrated out the per steradian, we're no longer tracking direction, just the net flow of energy through the surface. Upward and downward flux density. For a horizontal surface, it's often useful to separate the flux into upward and downward components. The upward flux density, F plus, represents energy flowing upward through the surface. In spherical coordinates, F plus equals the integral from phi equals 0 to 2 pi, and mu from 0 to 1, of I times mu d phi. Here mu equals cosine theta is the directional cosine, and the limits mu from 0 to 1 correspond to the upward hemisphere. Similarly, The downward flux density F minus represents energy flowing downward. For a horizontal surface with normal pointing upward, F minus equals the integral over the downward hemisphere, from mu equals negative 1 to 0. The net flux is then F equals F plus minus F minus. If more energy flows upward than downward, F is positive. If more flows downward, F is negative. This net flux determines whether a surface heats up or cools down. Applications in remote sensing. Flux density measurements are central to many remote sensing applications. Solar irradiance. The downward flux at the top of the atmosphere gives the solar constant, about 1,361 watts per square meter. This is the total solar power incident on a surface perpendicular to the sun's rays at Earth's mean orbital distance. Surface radiation budget. The net flux F equals F plus minus F minus determines whether the surface heats or cools. If the net flux is positive, more energy leaves than arrives, and the surface cools. If negative, more arrives than leaves, and the surface warms. Albedo. For solar radiation, the ratio of upward to downward flux, F plus over F minus, gives the albedo, the fraction of incident radiation that's reflected. Fresh snow has albedo near 0.9. Dark soil has albedo around 0.1. Vegetation is intermediate, around 0.2. Photosynthesis. Plants use photosynthetically active radiation, or PAR, which is the downward flux integrated over 400 to 700 nanometers, the visible spectrum. PAR measurements are essential for ecosystem studies. Irradiance and radiant power. We can integrate further to obtain even simpler quantities that are useful for energy budget calculations. Total hemispherical irradiance. The total hemispherical irradiance, denoted E, is obtained by integrating the monochromatic flux density over all frequencies, E equals the integral from 0 to infinity of F of nu times d nu. The units are simply watts per square meter. We've integrated out both the per steradian and the per hertz. This is the quantity measured by broadband radiometers such as pyranometers for solar radiation and pyrgeometers for terrestrial longwave radiation. Irradiance represents the total radiative energy, across all wavelengths, flowing through a unit area per unit time. It's perhaps the most intuitive radiometric quantity because it's what we feel as warmth when we stand in sunlight, the total energy hitting our skin per unit area. Radiant power. The final integration gives us radiant power, denoted capital Phi, which is the total flux through a surface of area A, Phi equals the double integral over the surface of E times D. If the irradiance is uniform over the surface, this simplifies to phi equals E times A. The units are simply watts, total energy per unit time. Radiant power is the appropriate quantity for energy balance calculations. For example, the solar power incident on the entire Earth is approximately 1,361 watts per square meter times pi times Earth's radius squared, which is about 1.74 times 10 to the 17th watts. That's an enormous amount of power, about 100,000 times current global human energy consumption. The hierarchy of radiometric quantities. Let me summarize the hierarchy we've developed. At the top, we have specific intensity 1, which depends on position, direction, frequency, and time. This is the most detailed. It tells us everything about the radiation field. Integrate over all directions to get flux density F, which depends on position, frequency, and time. We've lost directional information but retained spectral information. Integrate over all frequencies to get irradiance E, which depends on position and time. We've lost both directional and spectral information but retained spatial and temporal variation. Finally, integrate over a surface area to get radiant power phi, which depends only on time. This is the total energy flow, the most integrated quantity. Each successive integration reduces dimensionality but loses information. For detailed studies, we work with specific intensity. For energy budgets, irradiance or power suffices. The choice depends on what question we're asking. Conclusion and summary. Let's review what we've covered in this presentation on radiative quantities. We began with the photon cloud concept, electromagnetic radiation as a collection of discrete energy packets distributed in position, direction, frequency, and time. This led us to the photon distribution function F, which describes the number density of photons in seven-dimensional phase space. We connected photon counts to energy through Planck's relation, recognizing that higher frequency photons carry more energy. We understood that energy transport requires time, it's fundamentally a rate process. We explored the profound concepts of time and space. The speed of light is not just a constant but the defining link between spatial and temporal measurements. A meter is defined as the distance light travels in 1/299,792,458 of a second. We discovered how electromagnetic radiation propagates through the leapfrog mechanism of mutually sustaining electric and magnetic fields. Unlike mechanical waves that require a medium, EMR is self-propagating, it can travel through perfect vacuum. We developed the geometric framework for three-dimensional radiative transfer, solid angles measured in steradians, the crucial projection factor cosine theta, and hemispherical integration for flux calculations. We defined specific intensity, the fundamental radiometric quantity that describes energy flow per unit time, area, solid angle, and frequency. We learned its key properties, its directional, frequency-dependent, conserved along rays in vacuum, and directly measurable by narrow field of view instruments. We integrated specific intensity over directions to obtain flux density, separating it into upward and downward components for surface energy balance calculations. We saw applications to solar irradiance, albedo, and photosynthesis. Finally, we integrated over all frequencies to get total irradiance, and over surface area to get radiant power, the simplest but most integrated quantity appropriate for global energy balance calculations. These radiometric quantities form the mathematical language of remote sensing. Every measurement a satellite makes, every energy budget calculation we perform, every retrieval algorithm we develop uses these concepts. Specific intensity describes what sensors measure. Flux density describes energy flow through surfaces. Irradiance describes the total radiative energy impinging on or leaving from a surface. In our next sessions, we'll use these quantities to develop the radiative transfer equation. We'll describe how intensity changes as radiation propagates through absorbing, scattering, and emitting media. We'll learn how to predict what sensors measure from knowledge of atmospheric and surface properties, and inversely, how to retrieve those properties from sensor measurements. As you study the presentation slides, focus on the physical meaning of each quantity. When you see specific intensity, think about energy streaming in a particular direction at a particular frequency. When you see flux density, visualize the integration over a hemisphere of directions. When you see irradiance, imagine the total energy hitting a surface from all directions and all wavelengths. Understanding these radiative quantities deeply, not just mathematically but physically and intuitively, is essential for success in remote sensing. These are not abstract concepts but concrete descriptions of measurable physical quantities. Master them, and you'll have the foundation for understanding all of radiative transfer theory. Good luck with your studies.